From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. What's the most important ingredient in developing a good education system? Of course, good teachers and good principals should top the list, but perhaps there's even a more foundational ingredient, money. Education in our state is problematic, from low test scores to an absenteeism rate that's one of the worst in the nation. Recently, a nonprofit that specializes in education evaluation and reform provided a report that the state legislature hired them to do, and the results weren't pretty. Today on the show, you'll hear a conversation with the organization's lead and hear how in Oregon, we aren't spending enough on education and we're not spending it in the right areas. It's an exhaustive report with lots of problems, but it is a blueprint for how improvements can be made. There are almost as many opinions about education reform as there are educators. Today on the show, you'll hear from an expert on mining the data on statewide public education and hear where the major gaps are in Oregon. Jesse Levin, who led the project for the American Institutes for Research and their evaluation of Oregon's quality education model. Jesse, really appreciate you taking time and talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, why don't we start from the very beginning? You were tasked, if you will, by the Oregon legislature to evaluate the quality education model. Kind of tell us what the assignment was from the Oregon legislature to your group.
Certainly. And I think that the title of the project was a little misleading because it was much broader than just an evaluation of the quality education model.
Okay.
There were six tasks in total, and I'll just go through them very quickly
Sure.
for you here. The first task was really asking us to review Oregon's current school finance system. And then describe it. The second task was to explore the funding mechanisms of other states. The third was to do an evaluation of Oregon's quality education model, the QEM, and really use our expertise doing these types of analyses similar to what was done to develop the QEM, trying to bring our experience to it and suggesting how the QEM might be improved. The fourth task was to look at the trends in student performance and funding from before and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
Hmm.
Task five was to establish the cost of an adequate education for all students in Oregon, and we used an approach that I will describe shortly, I believe, called an educational cost model.
Okay.
And then finally, task six was to do a deeper dive into how Oregon funds students with disabilities.
Okay. So really, it's a very, very broad analysis. And your organization, American Institutes for Research, some people may not know who that is. Kind of give us a quick 30,000-foot view of what your organization sort of does for what you did for us, what you just talked about, but kind of in general, what's your organization's kind of stock and trade?
Okay, American Institutes for Research is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit social science research organization. We have been around doing work not only on education, but on workforce, international, for over 75 years. And so we've been around for a long time. I myself have been with the company for over 20 years doing education finance work and studies very similar to this for other states.
Okay. Why don't you take us through sort of how you undertook this project? It's obviously right in your wheelhouse. Tell, you know, a lay person how you kind of dug in to analyze this complex beast. It is the Oregon public education system.
Certainly. Well, so the first task was really grabbing a lot of documentation and detailing how you guys do things in terms of how does funding get from the state to individual school districts. Again, this was a massive effort in terms of grabbing documents, evaluating the documents, and then putting it into as plain language as we could. So now you have a real record that anybody could read and get some some basic understanding of how funding for public K-12 schools work in Oregon. The second task was then to do a 50-state scan of how other states fund their schools. And then we also took a smaller group of four peer states and compared those on a deeper level to Oregon's funding system and tried to draw some contrasts.
Okay.
The third task was, again, diving really deep into the documentation behind the quality education model. And this is a model that was developed by Oregon's Quality Education Commission originally back in 1999, and it has been revised many times since then. It is the QEM, Quality Education Model, is an input-oriented approach to costing out education. And what I mean by an input-oriented approach is it creates, it starts with three different models of an elementary, middle, and high school, and describes what these schools look like in terms of their size and their needs. And then a group of educational experts will determine or specify those staff and non-personnel resources that are necessary to deliver an adequate education in each of these contexts. Okay. So you have an elementary context, a middle school context, and a high school context, and they then cost out those inputs, those staff and non-personnel resources, and come up with a per pupil cost for each one of these contexts.
Hmm.
So we've done a lot of work similar to this using what we call a professional judgment approach, where we will go into a state and recruit expert educators from all over the state and put them on a number of different panels. And each panel goes through the same sets of exercises to determine the resources, the staff, and non-personnel necessary to provide an adequate educational experience in each of these contexts. So we've done this in several states, and we used our own experience performing this type of work to evaluate the QEC's work developing their QEM.
Okay.
Lots of acronyms here.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Really.
So I've got a couple more tasks for you. And so the next one was really doing this trend analysis to look at student performance measures and funding from before to after the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really a quantitative analysis where we gathered administrative data from Oregon Department of Education on various metrics related to student performance and fiscal data that had funding information, and showed the patterns of these different measures moving from before to after the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're really interested to see what happened once the pandemic hit. That is, was there a shock? And then what has been the trend after the pandemic hit?
Hmm. Let me quickly reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Jesse Levin. He led the project called the Evaluation of Oregon's Quality Education Model, and that was asked for by our state legislature.
Now, two more tasks for you, and then I'll try to quiet down a bit here. The fifth task was for us to determine an adequate education for all students in Oregon. And we used a cost function model. This is a statistical model where we take actual data from your schools on spending, and we relate spending to student outcomes while taking into account things like student needs and other characteristics that are deemed to influence the cost of producing those outcomes. So it's a real statistical model for those of you that have taken statistics out there. It's a regression model. We use regression estimation for this.
Okay.
And then our final task was to dig further into the mechanism to fund students with disabilities across your state. And we went in to the documentation behind this portion of your formula, and really did a descriptive analysis and then provided policy recommendations on how that might be improved.
Okay. So Jesse, tell us what you found after this exhaustive research project that you did. What'd you find?
I'm going to have to pare it down because sure. There are a lot of results, but okay. I'm going to give you some highlights of some of the results.
That sounds great.
For task two, this is where we really compared Oregon's funding mechanism to those of peer states. We found a couple of things that were of interest. One is that Oregon has no cost adjustment that takes into account the regional costs of hiring and retaining staff. So in some areas, it may cost more to attract staff to come and teach or be a principal. And Oregon does not have a regional cost adjustment, while there are several other states that do. Specifically, 12 other states currently use regional price adjustments. In addition, the adjustments to fund for particular student needs in Oregon does not account for concentrations of student needs. So there is no difference between on a per pupil funding level between a district with a very high concentration, say 80-90% of students who are economically disadvantaged, versus one where very few, 10% of the student population is economically disadvantaged. Okay. So that was one finding that I thought was interesting. I'm going to jump to the COVID analysis.
Okay.
One serious area of challenge for the state is chronic absenteeism. As one might expect, it jumped up significantly after the COVID pandemic. You might expect that it would have tempered or corrected itself afterwards, but it's actually been increasing at a faster rate since the COVID pandemic. And that is area for concern that I think the state really needs to focus on. In addition, math and English language arts achievement still hasn't yet begun to rebound. As you might expect, it took a hit. There was a shock to math and ELA achievement, and we haven't yet seen a rebound from that yet. Finally, I wanted to mention enrollment. Enrollment has started to rebound since the COVID pandemic, but it has not yet recovered to pre-pandemic levels. So I thought those were all very important takeaways from our analysis. I think the last one for this task, which is cause for concern, is that there were equity implications of COVID, as one might expect. So those schools that had more challenged student populations, i.e. those schools that had larger incidences of economically disadvantaged students, English learners, and students with disabilities, suffered larger negative impacts from the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so this can inform policy as to where they might want to focus to help out these more marginalized populations.
Yeah, it begs the question. You know, I think funding for schools is a hot topic. It's a political topic. It's rife with all sorts of opinions from all sorts of different constituencies. I guess what I wanted to see, you know, kind of in sort of asking the question of what we might be doing wrong in Oregon. Is it that we're not spending enough money, or are we not spending enough money in the right places, or is it as they say both?
It's a great question, and so I wanted to talk a little bit about our education cost model, which is really at the heart of this larger study.
Okay.
And so I would say it's all of the above. I mean, you had an A and a B. Do we need to spend more, or do we need to spend more on particular places? It's both. It's both of these things. We provide evidence that it costs more to provide an equal opportunity for students who are economically disadvantaged, English learners, or who have disabilities. to achieve at the same level, at a common level. So as we describe it, our definition of adequacy, of adequate cost, is what does it cost to provide all students an equal opportunity to achieve at a similar level? And for these usual suspect groups of students, economically disadvantaged English learners and students with disabilities, indeed, our analysis shows that it does cost more to provide these types of students an equal opportunity to achieve. In addition, we found evidence that in those schools with smaller enrollments, defined as less than 300, they also really would need to spend more on average in order to provide an equal opportunity. And so you might ask what the magnitude of this extra cost would be. Mm-hmm. Statewide on average in 22-23, you all spent $17,135 per student. And we estimated that to provide an adequate opportunity for all students, where all students could achieve graduation rates, ELA and math achievement, and chronic absenteeism that were aligned with your state standards or with respect to the absenteeism at the national rate of chronic absenteeism, it would cost about $4,526 more, or a total of $21,661. It's about 26% bump more. So it's considerable, but your standards are, you know, your standards are fairly high as well. We're talking about trying to get to a 90% graduation rate, for instance. Mm-hmm. So you know, the story there is that the it is both of the examples that you provided. Sure. The state has to spend more in order to provide an opportunity to meet these standards that it set for itself. And B, it has to differentially spend on students who are from these marginalized groups.
Okay. I want to go back to when you pulled out like a state like Colorado and the reason why you determined that that was a good peer state. You mentioned something about a pretty good rural urban divide similar to Oregon. Is that one of the big sort of, I don't know, foundational elements of where some of the problem lies here is that there are a lot of rural schools in Oregon that probably aren't getting the funding that they need.
Well, so we try to take into account all sorts of different cost factors in our model. And so that includes not only student needs, but we also look at enrollment size. And we also explore the use of things like population density.
Okay.
And so certainly in our final model, we found that those schools and districts with lower enrollments required higher levels of funding in order to provide those students in those districts an equal opportunity to larger districts. But I want the listeners to also understand that you have to take into account all of the cost factors, mm-hmm. not just the degree of rurality or the enrollment size, not just the student needs, but all of it together in one comprehensive funding framework.
Okay. And then the kind of, if you could take us through, so you provided this report to the legislature. What happens next?
Well, we provided a legislative briefing to mm-hmm. them, and they, as far as I can tell, they are going through the report. Remember, this is about 307 pages, so sure. There's a lot there. I think that they take a very careful approach, and my recommendation, we're available to provide additional support, but my recommendation is that they take our recommendations seriously and don't attempt to implement everything overnight. Right?
Sure.
I think that there's a lot to be said to taking things slowly and and trying to implement this thoughtfully. You don't want to infuse a whole lot of money overnight into a system, and you wouldn't want to take away a lot of money overnight in a
sure.
system either, right?
Yeah.
Because the programming shocks can be pretty drastic there. There are also so many details that I think they're going to have to consider, such as a phase-in. I mean, we're suggesting a 26% increase in funding. That revenue has to come somewhere, and it's quite unlikely that that would happen overnight. You know, often we will suggest that they consider a phase-in mm-hmm. over time to try to grow into a formula.
Yeah. Jesse, I know we've just scratched the surface. As you said, this is an incredibly complex report, but I think it's important, you know, for listeners to understand that such a report exists and showcases a lot of what, you know, is problematic about our education system, but also, you know, what as you said, a phased-in approach to fix. I'm sure we'll have you back because obviously, you know, the situation with our schools is one that has a lot of attention. But again, I appreciate at least taking a good step at trying to winnow down this incredibly weighty report. Jesse Levin was the project lead for this evaluation of Oregon's quality education model for the American Institutes for Research. Thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll check in on striking workers, potential strikes at the U of O, and potential funding cuts to the university, all stories brought to you by our local news team. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.